Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, December 20th, 2020. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and even Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. Give it a 5-star review. Let everybody know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. One in particular being the fact that I started this thing almost 8 years ago. I used some income tax return money, and I didn't buy sneakers like most of you think that a black person would do. Actually, I did buy some sneakers. I don't count it because it was from DSW. And it was reasonably priced. I think they were like $60 and they might have been on sale and I might have had a gift card or something. So I wouldn't count that. The Nike Cortezes, the navy blue Cortezes that I bought, that I still get compliments on when I wear them out. They're not like flashy or they're not gaudy sneakers. But I, along with some of that tax return money, I bought a Zoom H4N recorder and I started this thing. I said, you know, I want to do a podcast. My friends are doing it and I want to do it too. And I think I have something to offer. I have something to share with a couple hundred people that want to listen to me talk about stuff, talk about my life. And that's what I did. I bothered Andy Klein about the sound, and he said, Chris, give me a fucking break. This is what you do. And I said, okay. I bothered Christian Polanco. You know, and that's... I'm sorry, I didn't know I was going to get emotional about this. So early in the morning, I'm recording this. It makes me feel good about that when you tweet about the show, when you share the show, when you rate it, because I've been doing this almost 8 years and there's about 70 reviews on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. There's hundreds of you that listen. There's at least a couple hundred of you that listen to the show. If you like it enough, if it's brought any entertainment to you, it made you smile, if it made you think, if it made you reconnect with one of your parents, give it 5 stars. Just rate it and just say, I like this show. It's good. It's funny. You know? Just do that. You'll make a black guy feel good. Black lives matter, right? What about this black life? What about me? What about a guy that for almost 8 years has woken up on Sundays and done a show, done a podcast for you for free. That wasn't really asking you anything. Subscribe to the Patreon. You know what I'm saying? Subscribe. But you know what I'm saying? That really just by himself, that's done this by himself, that's went out in the rain, sleet, and snow and interviewed people. Some you've never heard of before. Some of them you never heard before, but some that he's interviewed, I'm talking in the third person, some that he's interviewed that maybe you didn't hear of before, but now you know who they are. Now you can turn on Amazon Prime or Netflix and you can see their faces on screen and who talked to them before anybody else. Me. Who did that? It was me. Because I saw something in them. I saw their talent. And I saw what they had to offer. I'm not saying that I had anything to do with their success. I'm just saying after they did the show, they became household names. I'm not saying that Van Hunt's life changed after he did this show. But I am saying that after he did this show, he started dating Halle Berry, Was he a genius musician before he talked to me? Of course he was. Of course he was. But what happened after? Halle Berry's taking pictures of him and throwing his Instagram. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart? You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 472. There's no guest. It's just me sitting here in my apartment early on Sunday morning. NBA TV is on mute. They're playing Mavericks Bucks, the replay. It's 38-38. Tied right now in the second quarter. And this is one of the things I like about NBA TV. It's one of my favorite channels to watch because you can catch this basketball. You can see this basketball. This is preseason basketball, but you can watch it. And you can see these players that will be insignificant because LeBron and, you know, LeBron's going to be in the finals next year. And it's just about who they're going to play in the East. And you hear all these stories about, oh, this guy is going to be good. This guy is great. This guy is fucking, I mean, he is so good. And this is bad. He's the MVP. And they can't even get out the fucking playoffs. They can't even get out the second or third round. And who's holding the trophy? Who's holding the trophy? It's LeBron. It's LeBron. He's holding the trophy. You can size all of these guys that you want, but it's LeBron. It is. That's what it is. So we'll see. We'll see. Did they start the season? Are they starting it 6 weeks or so after the bubble? Yeah, they are. Because they're like, we want our money and we want it now. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with Giannis, who signed this Supermax contract. God love them. They got the money to pay him. Take it, Giannis. Get that money, bro. We'll see what happens. We'll see. We'll see what happens with Kevin Durant and Kyrie. We'll see if Kyrie can stay healthy for a whole season. We'll see what happens. He's spreading incense during a preseason game when he goes back to Boston. We'll see, Kyrie. We'll see. You don't want to talk to the media. We'll see what you do on the court, buddy. We see that you don't want to fulfill part of your job description as a professional athlete, that you don't have time to talk to the media. You're a great player. I love watching you play, Kyrie. I love playing with you in 2K. Beautiful basketball player. I don't think I've ever seen anybody dribble like that. But we'll see what happens. You're going to go on podcast and talk about the fact that only now in your career that you feel like you have somebody that can finish a game. When LeBron carried you through those seasons when he went back to the Cavs. But, you know, you won a championship because of LeBron. You were in the position to make that shot because of LeBron James. But, you know, they don't want to give him the credit. What does that guy have to do? I don't know. I mean, I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy sitting on his couch post-breakfast, post some honey bunches of oats, doing a podcast that a couple hundred people listen to. You know, I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy. So I don't know. I don't know. We will see. We'll let everything play out. We'll see what happens. Is it fun? Of course it's fun. Am I excited about it? Yes. I'm excited that I saw Kevin Durant play basketball. I'm excited, you know, because he's been hurt. And I see him, you know, play whoever they played in that preseason game. And he looked spry. He looked good. He looked good, and he looked good last night. I don't always watch these games. I watch them on Instagram. I don't watch the games on Instagram, but I see the highlights because I follow all those NBA sites. And they're looking good. But we'll see what happens, man. We'll see. Sunday morning. So like I said, I'm post-breakfast. I didn't have my omelet this week. I didn't feel like it. I didn't feel like it, guys. Do I have all the fixings that I like to have on my omelet? I do. I'll probably make one sometime later in the week. So I'm post-breakfast. And I'm also post Power Book 2 Ghost. And my God, is that the best fucking TV show in the game, right? That's the best TV show on television right now. On this idiot box. It's the best thing on the idiot box right now. And I don't care what you say. Do I like Fargo? Yes. Do I like Lovecraft Country? You know I do. All these prestige shows. Did I like The Undoing? You're fucking right I did. I was on it. But my God, is Power Book 2 Ghost. It's great. It's so good. There's stuff that's funny, that's supposed to be funny, that's funny. There's stuff that's not supposed to be funny. It's fucking great. And I was skeptical like most people. I was skeptical like, you're going to continue Power and the main guy's not there anymore because Tariq shot him. His own son shot him. And his mom's in jail. So how's there going to be a fucking show? And I was skeptical when I pressed play on my TV when I did it on demand or whatever the fuck. And 15 minutes in, I was sold. And I know that I've talked about this before, but it's fantastic. Like this latest episode was just like, are you kidding me? They're bringing characters back and they're fitting in well. And it's like, what the fuck are you guys going to do with this? This is going to be some shit. And it's like, not like some, this not in a bad way, but it's like, this is going to be some shit. What's going on with this right now? And I was just like, I'm blown away. If you're not on board, you know, hey, you know, and Aisha was on last week and she was talking about, you know, she didn't like Lovecraft Country as much as I did. She cited P-Valley is one of her favorite shows of this year. And I was like, yeah, I love P-Valley too, but you don't get P-Valley. You don't get a sudsy show like P-Valley without the success of Power. You don't get that. And people try like star. I don't know what it is though. Sometimes like, it's like plus I watch it. I like watching it early in the morning. And cause nobody will spoil it on Twitter. And I think I'm so washed that by the time Power comes on, it airs, like it actually airs on Stars. I think I'm damn near asleep by the time that shit comes like 8 or 9 o'clock, or I'm ready to go to bed because I wake up so early in the morning. But it's fantastic. I love it. I love it. It's so good. I want to talk about some things. I want to talk about some stuff and things. I want to recommend you some TV and movies. I want to talk about other few things that's going on this week. This week has been pretty good. Talking to friends about stuff, about life stuff, learning from mistakes, learning that people are in your life for a couple seasons or so. And it's okay. Learning that to let stuff go, even though it's like weird and might feel kind of weird at first, but it's like, I get why that person, and it takes a friend to say, hey, that person was doing what was right for them, and that right thing was you not being around in any capacity anymore. And it's like, okay, I gotta accept that, you know, without getting into any details, but, so many details. Who sings that? Who sings that? 20 points if somebody gets that. You email me or tweet me. So many details you sing. That song's my jam right now. Okay. So this week, let's see. Okay. So I finally got my oven. My landlord. My horrible landlord finally, after 7 months, brought in my oven. And it's great. It's like a new, it's new, and I've been able to put stuff in it. I had some Nestle Toll House cookies that I use, not a sponsor, that I've had in my freezer for a long time. I said, let me just pop them out. Let me just test the oven out. And it was cool. It turned out good. I actually have a light on my oven, an oven light. You might say, Chris, everybody's got an oven light. Well, when I first moved here, up until almost the 11 years that I've been here, 12, I've been here 13. I've been in this place a long time. And I never had an oven light until today, till, you know, this week passed, that passed. Because it was such an old-ass fucking oven. And, yeah, there's some other shit that had happened when he brought it in, but I don't want to talk about that. Maybe at another date. Maybe it'll be in my stand-up. But finally got it. And, what else did I put in there? I had a DiGiorno that I hadn't had in a long time. You know, it was up in my freezer for months just to, you know, test it out. Turned out good. Had a little DiGiorno. What else did I put? I put some asparagus in there. Finally got to roast some asparagus again. Cause I was just starting to get the hang of that. It's not hard to, you can season it, put a little oil over it and just put it in there until it gets edible, until it's not super crunchy. And I had these like thick, like THICC thick asparagus, and did that. It turned out great. And I took a picture of them and, I was going to put it on Instagram, and I put it on Instagram and I said, felt cute, might delete later. And I said, let me just fucking delete that. And I just put it up on my little Instagram story. And people were checking it out. People were checking out my asparagus. And I forgot that I put the feature on when you post to Instagram, it automatically posts to Facebook. And I don't really go on Facebook that much. And I saw that it ended up having like 60 likes just for posting a food thing. And I'm not somebody who posts. I don't think I'm that good on social media. I know I know my shortcomings, but I'm not the coolest, most savviest person on social media. I've gotten some viral tweets a few times. You know, I've had my moments, but I got 60 likes for just a post of asparagus, and some people, I got the laughs and all that stuff. Somebody actually did say thick, THICC. And somebody said, you know, somebody was cracking jokes and stuff about pee and urine and all that. And then one girl never mind. Somebody said, oh, Hinge. Like, so that was funny. Like, I'm putting it because of whatever. But that just a random picture that got more likes than me posting about my podcast. It's so hilarious to me that it's just like people like my food pics more than anything I've done. Now I don't think this is my aesthetic. I think it probably is. And I don't even think it's an aesthetic. I said, you know, I come across as a regular dude that is, I'm talented, but I'm a regular dude that occasionally does cool things. Like I occasionally do stuff on TV and I do stand up and, you know, I think I'm a man about town. No, I'm not. I'm funny. I'm a talented motherfucker, but I come across as just a regular dude that, you know, gets to do shit, cool shit every now and then. But it's like, you know, I'm just, oh, this is, you know, listen to my podcast. I had this fucking cool person that made a movie and did this really cool shit. 20 likes. But I post some fucking, I don't know, man. It's crazy. But people do like, I think people do like food pics. I mean, I kind of want to just look at my Instagram, like the most recently, like at least this year, I've done some stuff with food. I took that picture of, there was a stretch, like, yeah, so like a good, cause I'm not on this social media thing that much. And like, I made some fried chicken in May. I went to this place called The Meeting Place in Haskell, New Jersey. It's like kind of like one of those northwestern-y towns in Jersey. Like, and I fucking love Jersey. And it's just, so it's a cool town. It's a small town, and they have this butcher shop that's really good. And I found out about them on Instagram, and I've been following them. I've told you about, if you're new to the podcast, this will be new to you. So, I finally make it out there and just like support a local business. And you know, you follow a place for so long, it's like, I want to check this place out. And so I bought some chicken from them, and I bought like two whole chickens, and some I made that in May, and I put it in the freezer, and recently made some not too long ago. And, you know, anyway, so I wanted to just really take a picture just to shout out The Meeting Place. And I got like 60 likes. I mean, for me, you know, that doesn't put a guy who doesn't post that much, like, that's pretty good. And it was the John Legend. Shout out to Keith. He was like, he wrote me, is that the sexiest man alive's recipe? And some people were like, oh my God, you know, like, oh, that's so cool. The Meeting Place actually said, this looks unreal. So they liked that. And then, one of my friends, just like a good friend, I mean, you can fucking see it on, if you go to that Instagram picture, but she's like, I'm learning so many new things about you. Want to get married? And I said, you know, you could have had me. What did I say? I told her she could have had me 10 years ago or something like that. We should have been married at least 10 years ago, but you don't return my call. You never return my phone calls. And she's like, oh, you're calling me out, blah, 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 whatever. Fun exchange on the social media feed. Anyway, so that's one. And then like a month or two earlier, I made a prime rib, and that was back in April, and it was a sexy piece of meat. It was very sexy. And that got like 138 likes, and people went crazy. And The Meeting Place, and I think I posted that on Facebook too. That's probably somewhere on Facebook. Again, The Meeting Place was like, geez, like they gave me props. Yeah, so people love that. So, you know, I'm back. I'm tempted to get some prime rib, but I'm not going to get that big a piece of meat. But yeah, that turned out good. 139 likes. And, when I released my album cover, or I think I said, oh, this failed running back's available for pre-order, that got 100 likes. So the prime rib got 39 more likes than me talking about my album that I put, you know, that's like it's years in the making. So let's see what I got when my album went number one. My album went number one. It debuted number one on iTunes on the comedy charts. 122 likes. See, food picks are, I think that's what's going to work for me. And all the cool people that I've had on the podcast, it's like, no, Chris, we like you posting about food. Nobody gives a shit about your stand up, your podcast, or what play you went to see. We care about your food picks. So maybe is that the universe telling me that I need to pivot into cooking, or is it just saying that, I don't know. Is it the algorithm trying to ruin greatness? You decide what that is. So I'm glad that that's back. I'm glad that I have an oven and I can do more things and, you know, probably save more money. And food tastes better. I hate using the microwave. I'll use the microwave to warm up, like, some vegetables or something maybe, and, like, you know, do the steamer thing. And I have a steamer basket now, so I don't, you know, might not use it that much anymore. But yeah, I don't like using the microwave, and like, food tastes better when you warm it up in the oven anyway. When you cook it in the oven and then when you warm stuff up, you know, like leftovers and stuff, it tastes way better. So that was that. I also had a callback for an audition. I was supposed to have a callback on Monday, but that got canceled because they cut the role. And that was the second time that show cut a role. This is another show. So like, I've had mini white whales that I wanted to conquer, like these just like personal goals. It's not like I want to win an Oscar. Would I want to win an Oscar? Of course I would. You know that. I mean, that would be amazing. But currently it's like you kind of want to, like, for me, it's like I want to be on this TV show. I want to just have a part on this show. I want to just kind of do all the net, be at least on every network that's on. I want to say that I've been on all these networks. And there's this one show that films here in the New York area, and it's like, I want to be on that show. You know, I want to, you know, just be on this show. And my dad watches that show, and I want to fucking be on it. And it's like, so it's like, okay. So there's two shows on the same network. It's like my manager, they like you. The casting director likes you. And, you know, they just, that's why they call you in. That's why they call you in. Because the manager, they like you. That's why, you know, they want, but it's the decision of the producers to make and all that stuff. The casting director can only do so much. So I think the first time, I've auditioned for that show several times. First time, you know, it just didn't book the fucking thing. Second time, there was another time where I auditioned. My car got stuck in the parking garage and it wouldn't fucking start. So I had to wait all fucking day for the bullshit ass insurance. What is it? Not insurance. I think it was. It was one of those. I think it was them. Yeah, and they were shitty, and it took all fucking day for them to get somebody on a random day to, like, just tow my car or start it up, and somebody finally fucking came. And it was just fucking brutal having this, just, you know, it was a fucking shit show. So that was that. And it wasn't the TV show's fault. It was just a fucking thing. It could have been worse. Could have been somewhere else. God, I remember that. It fucking sucks. Then I had this really good audition. It was going to be, it was just like a scene. Maybe it was just like a scene where I'm not even going to say what I was, was playing, but it was just like, it would have been a good exposition scene. And for the main characters, just like a day player role that was pretty fucking good. And I'm doing the scene, and it's like I'm doing the scene at my manager's office, and he gets one, this other guy who's another manager, he's managed like some big time actors. And we just had a really good read. Like, he was just like giving me shit. He was like giving me notes. He was like, oh, why don't you think about this? This is going on. That's going on. Why don't you kind of incorporate that into the scene? It was fucking great. And I was like, that's one of the best auditions I've ever had. Like, you know, one of the best readers I've ever had. And, you know, cause sometimes when you read for stuff, you never really, you know, when Sujata Day was on, we were just talking about, you know, like readers not giving you anything, or like, you know, somebody that's helping you do the scene. Like, that's called a reader, a person who's like reading the other parts. and hopefully trying to make you look good, you know, for the producers and everybody that's in director and all that shit, the creative team. And when they're not giving you anything, it's just kind of bad. But this guy, because it was a manager, he knows the game. He's been in the game for years. We just have this great fucking scene, and we submit that. And I think we submitted it pretty quick. And then I get a call from my manager like the next day. He's like, Chris, you know, yeah, they cut that part. They're not gonna do that role. Cause the role, no, actually, I think he was like, I think it might have been, oh, they're gonna make it a woman. So I think they saw that, cause it was interchangeable. It could have been a man or a woman with that job, but I think they changed it to a woman. I was like, did y'all see? It was like, cause they saw my joint and they were like, no. I don't know. Or they saw it and cut the role. It's been a couple times. I think it was one time they cut the role, and then one time they just changed the role to a woman. And so, like, I have this, like, audition a week ago now, and it was cool because it was, like, my first one with the actual casting director and just going back and forth, just doing just, like, one line. And he was like, that was great. Why don't you try it this way and that way? I was like, oh, appreciate it. Great. Thanks. And it was good. And I, you know, got the call back. And then I get the call Monday from my manager's like, yeah, they're cutting that. So it's like, okay. All right. Fucking showbiz, baby. There's no business like show business. Like, no business. I know. So that was that. Yeah, I'm not. So hopefully I will get a part on that show one day. I mean, that happened with New Amsterdam a couple times where the casting director liked me. And then I think anytime where you feel like it's not necessarily too good to be true, but it's edging on being too good to be true, it's probably not going to happen. So I just try to have like this even keeled attitude when it comes to moving up the ranks as far as casting, getting cast is concerned. It's like, okay, you're on hold. I don't believe it until I'm on set or they tell me like where I'm supposed to be. I don't really, you know, I'm not really like, I got it. And you know, I'll tell my parents or something like, oh yeah, I'm on hold. This for the part, I'm on hold. And sometimes I didn't tell them that this guy, I didn't tell them that this got canceled or they cut the role for this one. If they listen to the podcast, they would hear this, but they don't. And I don't think I would want them to. What else, guys? There's been some stuff. Like my loud ass neighbor that lives below me. He was playing his music loud yesterday. And then he had, I think it almost was like, I was about to get really pissed because I was having a taping. I was doing like a Zoom call. And I was like, this motherfucker. I was just like cursing and all that stuff. And then it almost felt like somebody said something to him and then he cut it off. But I think maybe I was just hearing somebody else outside, but then the music cut off. And then I think his kids, like I'm kind of still talking kind of low because it's like really quiet. And then I think his kids, he's got like one or two kids. He's got at least one kid. And he was like yelling at the kid. I kind of felt bad. Because like then it's like the fucking human side. Like, does this guy hate his life? And like maybe is he split up with his baby's mother? I don't know, because sometimes I don't know what's going on. I don't know, but but then I also found out that he likes The Office. I don't know if he's just starting to discover the show, but it's like he's obviously probably watching it on Netflix or something, because you can tell because the bass, like it's not loud like them. You can just hear. You can hear stuff. It where it's not necessarily loud. So I want, you know, I'm getting kind of paranoid because I'm thinking like it's really quiet and could he be hearing me talk about him? Because I'm like talking shit. But like, I know the Office theme song when I hear it, and it's just like, you can hear the bass like bum 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 na 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 na. And he must like the intro because he never skips it. Like I'm watching The Sopranos right now, you know, like I'm in my rewatch, and I skipped the intro. Woke up this morning, got yourself a gun. Woke up this morning. You know, I'd skip all that because I, you know, you're binging the episode. You don't need to watch the intro, but I can tell every time he's watching it because you can hear it. It's like, dude, just skip the fucking intro. So the vaccine dropped, guys, and it kind of caught me off guard because it was like a black woman administering the vaccine to this black nurse. And I teared up, man. I teared up. It was so unexpected. I wasn't like, I wasn't like that, but it was just like, yo. And it was something about her voice because she was like, I think she was kind of like maybe a Caribbean or Jamaican woman that, you know, she was talking, you know, it's, you know, everybody needs to take it when they can get it. And, you know, I was like, oh my God. I was like, so I just kind of, it just got a little emotional watching that, man. And I hope that, it seems like it's getting around to all the right people, all the people, the first responders and all that. And, you know, hopefully it's going to get to the point where it's, you can get it at CVS or Walgreens. When I think I was talking to Randolph one time, or he might have said it on a podcast. I think we were talking about it on a podcast where you go to CVS and they just ram it into your arm. Like they're just like, oh, there you go. They're not mean like that, but that was a good experience. And again, I got my flu vaccine from a black woman who, you know, held it, that she's, you know, it was so weird that, I don't know if I told you this, I might've, when I went to get my flu shot, I made an appointment at one CVS that was like right near me, and they act like they didn't want to give me the fucking thing. So I just went to another one and the black woman gave it to me. I don't know what it is. I might've said that, like I don't know if they thought I was like dirty or something, but I took a shower. I had my hoodie on. I think maybe because I was a black guy in a hoodie. I don't fucking know. Who knows? Maybe she was just racist, or maybe they really didn't have any more vaccines. Whatever. We'll never know. I think they were racist. Tom Cruise got angry on the set of Mission Impossible 50. And, you know, somebody recorded it and they played, oh my God, dude, Tom Cruise, blah, 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 he's yelling and all this shit. It's not like he wasn't saying anything wrong. It's like the kids say, where's the lie? I didn't see the lie in anything he was saying. There was nothing wrong in what he was saying. You know, maybe he was, I'd like to think that I wouldn't be yelling at people. But when you think about like Hollywood kind of being on the line, and that's his business, that's what he's been doing for years and years. Tom Cruise is the greatest American movie star. I would say Tom Cruise is the great, no, nay. Tom Cruise is the greatest movie star of all time. Do I have actors that I like a little better? Of course I do. You know, I love Denzel. You know, I love Will Smith. But Tom Cruise, one of the greatest movie stars of all time, never had to put on a superhero costume to be that. It ain't an action movie if Tom Cruise ain't running in that joint. One of the greatest, man, the GOAT. And he puts his life on the line. He gives it everything he has, man, you know, and he cares about the industry. That's why he went to go see Tenet. I knew it was definitely a PR move of him going to see Tenet in Paris, I believe, at the height of, you know, in the midst of the pandemic, trying to get people to go back to the theaters if they can, to, because he's like, yo, if you guys go to see, if you know, y'all will go see my shit. I'm not going back until everybody's got the vaccine. I don't know when I'll go back to the movies, to be honest with you. It's just like, yo, like I was a little disappointed, and I'll get back to Tom Cruise. I was a little disappointed that movie Fatale was not on demand. Like you couldn't like rent it. I would have paid $20 to rent that movie because it would have been safe, obviously. And it looked like a fun movie to enjoy. I don't know, man. And you obviously know that these theaters don't give a fuck about you. So they're just about their money. And I saw where some independent film houses or movie theaters are going to get some, what do you call it? They're going to get some money, but like some aid, some relief, for being affected by COVID and everything. But Tom Cruise, man, he's one of the greats. And if he's trying to keep everybody safe, he's a producer. If people get sick and die, that's on him. So yeah, I think he would be impacted. This is life and death right now. And you have the privilege to be making movies, and it's an industry, and it's not, is it, it's been made frivolous by this disease, this virus, but at the same time, all we're doing is watching TV for the most part. If you're not just, you know, the people that I've had on the show during this year, oh, what are you watching? Are you watching this? You're watching that. What are you watching? We're talking about these performances. We're talking about, you know, the production, but we're talking about all of this stuff that continues to happen because these people put out projects. They put out this content that we're constantly consuming. It is important. I'm a part of it. Not at a large scale, but I'm a part of it. You know, I was one of the cogs in the machine. You saw The Undoing. I spent time doing there on that show. There was a crew. There's so many people behind the scenes that make things work. And it's an industry. And Tom Cruise is trying to protect that industry. So yeah, he's yelling, you know, so what? I mean, I'd like to think that I would have handled it in a better way, but I understand his passion. And when you see Mission Impossible 85 and you see that motherfucker jumping off a spaceship and without a mask, and you see him do all these crazy ass stunts, you're going to be like, God damn, Tom Cruise was right. Fuck. When you see him like riding on an elephant with, you know, shit, man. It's going to be great. So I'm not mad at Tom Cruise at all. It's like, you know, it's like George Clooney was like, yeah, I get it, but I probably wouldn't have did it like that. But other than that, it is what it is. I think people making a big fucking deal about it, but they're going to always, it wasn't like the Christian Bale thing. And then at the same time, like, I don't know, like that Christian Bale thing, he was yelling and shit. And I know you're trying to get into your character and your moment, and that's a little different. We're talking about like a performance versus people's lives, you know? So like, I'm trying to get this performance right, and this guy's hanging this light and all that shit. And then sometimes you realize when you're on these sets, the more that I've done in TV and film, the more I've realized where this shit is not about you at all, really. Like you are, no matter where you are on the call sheet, you're essentially a cog in the machine to fulfill a demand and the dreams of the director, the production company, and the studio. where it's like you're just say your line, how you fill in all the artistic shit that you do as a performer, and you do your job, and they got to capture it. You know, I think that's what it's about. And yeah, Tom Cruise is a super movie star, and he's kind of a weirdo. You all that Scientology shit that, you know, people talk about. And but he does seem to, it seems that he doesn't, I'm gonna err on the side that he doesn't want anybody to get sick and doesn't want anybody to die from this shit, and that to be on his hand, because God forbid something happened to one of those people, they're gonna blame Tom Cruise. You know, what else, guys? There's more. This Leonard Roberts Variety article. This I don't know. I guess kind of like an op-ed that he did. Heroes was supposed to be Leonard Roberts' big break. Instead, it nearly broke him. This is a guy that he was on claim to fame as Drumline, and he's been working actor, just a guy that's been working for a long time. And Heroes came out, when did Heroes come out? I want to say like early 2000s. Heroes, was it like 2004 or something like that? Heroes, 2006, sorry, 2006 to 2010. They did 4 seasons of this show, and it I remember watching like the first couple seasons. But anyway, Leonard Roberts, what else was he in? I know like the black people know him from being Nick Cannon's nemesis and Drumline. And he also, Denzel gave him the throat chop in He Got Game. Drumline, using Drumline, the new beat, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Just been in some shit. A working actor. And he was having problems. Like, he was supposed to be like have this really big role in this big time network TV show. And he just found his role getting like diminished as the show progressed. And I think he did 2 seasons, I believe, of Heroes. And it was like basically one of the big problems he had was with Ali Larter, who was playing his wife, and she was weird about them getting intimate. And he wasn't, it looked like, you know, he wasn't a dude that was trying to be creepy. He was just trying to do his job. And it was just fucking weird. Yeah, let's see how many seasons he did. He did 17 episodes. And they basically killed his character off. You read the article's actually good, and it just, the producers didn't back him up, and it's like Ali Larter, I guess, seemed to be racist. And Ali Larter, I think, you know, not to be, I don't want to be reductive or anything, but just for the point of this, somebody before doing Heroes was known for having the whipped cream on her titties in Varsity Blues. And you know, it seemed like she was being a prima donna on set, and just made life, Ali Larter, it made life difficult for Leonard Roberts, and he essentially lost his job, basically. And then she came out with some half-assed apology. That shit was just whack, man. She was in Final Destination. She was in Obsessed a little in 2009 with Idris Elba and Beyonce. And it's like, you know, I saw people saying like, goddamn, like Idris Elba, you have to be Idris Elba for her to fuck with you. If you black, like you have to be exceptionally good looking. You looking at Leonard Roberts, man, good looking guy, good looking black dude. What was the problem? And it's like, yo, and it's like, you think about it. I was talking to a friend about this, and it was just almost like, it made me reevaluate so much shit. And it made me just like think about stuff like, man, they don't fucking like us. It's like, they don't like us, man. It's like, unless you're, it's like, goddamn, you got to be Idris Elba. I know the shit that's like, you have to be better than blah, blah, blah. You have to be twice as better to be even in the same room with these people and all this shit. But it's like, you got to be fucking otherworldly good looking like Idris Elba to just be in the room with these some of these regular ass chicks. Like, I've wondered, like, I've dated black women that outkicked my coverage several times, and a lot of times have been with black women, and it's put on me that I just like white girls and all that shit. That's bullshit. But like, I don't want to say it. I should say it. No, I will say it. Like, the black women that have given me a chance to just be in the same room with them and to that have trusted me to take them out. Some of these white girls that, some, not all, but a few of them are not on, there's some that aren't on the level of the, it looks wise, if we're just talking about looks, that are not on that level. And there's been other, it's been women of color that are badder than some of these. Okay. You know what I think you know what I'm alluding to if we're just talking about looks. So it's almost like, why waste your time? Now, I would be a fool to limit myself to by excluding those women from the people that I could partner with one day, but like, it almost seems like it's just not fucking worth it. I think about that in show business terms, but like just in work, in dating and shit. I mean, this is kind of like a I don't know, man. Excuse me. It helped me come to the realization that, or just added more clarity to the fact that how deep it goes into not being liked because of the color of your skin. And this past election was proof of that. That you still had 70 million people that believed what they believed in spite of, you know, Joe Biden winning as decisively as he did. Still people that want to honor white supremacy. And it's a microcosm of everything. It's just why I think that show, Kenya Barris's Black as Fuck, is so... so good, where it's like, oh yeah, that's because of slavery. Yeah, you can whittle stuff down and you can get the whys and hows, but at the top of that, on a macro level, it's because of slavery. And it's just like, God, do you think that you just like, okay, I'm an actor, and it's like, I'm thinking like I'm Leonard Roberts. I'm an actor. I'm a good looking guy. I'm like, it's like 15 years. What is he like? He's like 40. He's 48 now. And you just think like he's a young actor on the come up. Good looking dude. Just like how many times am I going to say he's good looking? Whoa, Chris, pause. But no, it's like good looking dude. Got the world by the balls a little bit. Working actor, and I'm gonna do this TV show, and it's gonna change my life. It's gonna change my career. Put my career into another stratosphere. I'm on this network show that has the potential to be hot. And it's like this chick is a roadblock because she, quote unquote, feels uncomfortable. You're an actress. Act, motherfucker. Act. Ain't that what you do? Act. Man. Hurt. We have to like make ourselves so uncomfortable to make them just feel safe. When it's like nobody stood up to her. Nobody said, you know, we could get somebody else. You know, we could get, you know, Jennifer Love Hewitt wouldn't have a problem with this. I'm just throwing names in there. But shit, man. It's really bad. And it just makes that stuff makes me think about because it makes me think about. I definitely think about that at work. I definitely, when I'm at my day job, it doesn't come up often, but I think about that. I think about it, you know, in the business when you're acting and stuff. I remember, actually, you know what? I'll tell you this story. I remember when I was in eighth grade, I was doing a production of The Sound of Music. And I was in a predominantly white school. This is like my last year in junior high. This would have been my second year. I was at that school for 2 years at Mount Calvary Catholic School in Forestville, Maryland. And it was a predominantly white school. And they were doing Sound of Music. The year before, they had done The King and I. And The King was played by a black dude. And he was good. He was great in the show. And Sound of Music, like the big leads for the male characters would have been Captain Von Trapp and Max. And because I think people knew that I was up for one of those probably. I remember that there was this girl, Lori. She's a really pretty blonde girl. And she was really good. And I think everybody knew that she'd probably be Maria. And she was white. And I knew, I was like, because my racism levels were really high back then, I've kind of tapered. While everybody now it's cool to be woke, like, this is the black body and XYZ, all the stuff, all the shit that you read on Twitter, on black Twitter, like all that shit. I was aware of that back then, and I just didn't have Twitter. And I knew where I stood racially, and I knew all of this stuff. I knew about that. And I was like, yeah, I don't know that I want to be Captain Von Trapp because he eventually gets with this white girl. Now, I thought Lori was pretty. Like, obviously, she's a pretty girl, whatever. But it was something that was like, I don't know that I want to be kissing a white girl in this. Now, I should have, you know, looking back, I mean, what the fuck were you thinking, Chris? Jesus. You know, now I wouldn't give a shit. But like, I was just thinking like, oh, are the parents going to be mad that I don't even think they kissed. But I know like my love interest was going to be a white girl. And I said to I think I was talking about it like with some friends or something, but I just knew, I have to ask my parents about that. I knew it was kind of like a thing. I knew it was going to be some shit. I was just thinking about that. And I said, you know, I think I would want to be Max because it's more fun. He's more fun. Max Detweiler. He had two songs and he was a character that helped the Von Trapps escape from the Nazis. He helped them get out of town or whatever. And he had two songs and he was funny. And I thought that I could, you know, I thought as an young actor at 14 years old, I thought that I could bring all of those qualities to the role. And so I did it. They cast me as Max. I fucking killed that shit. But I just knew, like, and that's when they like the sex, your sexuality, you're being around these girls, and you. And I had a scene with this other girl, Brianna, who was like a sweet girl, and she was like, she was more spunky and kind of like a tomboy, but very, very feminine at the same time. She's like another, she's a cute girl, but she was like more, I remember her being like a little less demure than the other girl, Lori. Both of them were sweethearts. And we ended up having a great fucking play. And that was the time that, like, I think that was a time that I was like, wow, I really, and because like my dad said, you know, I told the story 100 fucking times, but when the black parents were like proud of me, the way that I did that role and like what I, we did some stuff like after the show and they were like really proud because I was like doing all this shit on stage. It was really fucking cool. But I remember that I was thinking about, I don't need to be kissing a white girl, get these people all mad and shit. And I remember in my sophomore year of college, I was, I've talked about being Stanley Kowalski in A Streetcar Named Desire, talking about colorblind casting. And when you're in educational theater, a lot of times, I don't know what they do now, but like back then it was more like, you know, if the best actor gets the best role, and that the role that they're suited for. And I got that part, and my wife was white, and I remember her, but my Stella was white, and I remember, like, just kind of being worried about that, like, because the girl who played Stella was from South Carolina, and I was worried about her parents, like, goddamn near fuck kissing my girl and touching on her ass. I thought about that shit, too, and, yeah, it was something, man, like, that's never not been a thought. And to see it happen to this, to Leonard Roberts, is like, oh yeah, they don't fucking, collectively they don't really fucking like us. And talking to a friend who's talking about this shit, it's just like, you know, you think about like interracial dating and marriage, like it's out there, but it ain't all that prevalent as we think it is. It's always going to be some shit around it. It's always going to be like, you might lose certain family members. It's just like, you know, not as hard as being gay, but it's like, there are people that reject you or reject those. There's some family members of people that reject you because of, you know, who you choose to partner up with. And it just made me think more expansively about like interracial dating. And it's just like, do I even want to give this person a, do I even want to shoot my shot? And that's not even, that, and even if that person likes you, it's like, do I want to fucking deal with this person's parents? Like, I want to be with this person. I don't want to be with all the baggage around that. It's hard enough to be with somebody. And you just think about, like, the way that I fucking think, it's like, well, I like this girl. We spend time. She likes me. And we want to build something maybe. And then if things get more serious, then I got to go to her parents' house after COVID's over, you know, and her white parents. It's hard to, you know, I don't know. You can't help but with who you fall. You can't help with who you fall in love with, but it just made me think really critically about that and some of the choices that I've made and, you know, fucking around with them white girls. And it's all, it's a lot. Yeah. So I'm with you, Leonard Roberts. I mean, it seemed like he's still getting work and stuff, but I'm glad that he spoke on it. You know, it's a dude that you look at, it's like, yeah, this dude should be working more. It's fucking weird, man. And it happened. It's not just show business. It's not just entertainment. It's like that in the everyday world. If you was working at fucking Starbucks and working at FedEx, anywhere, it's just got a little more stank on it because it's showbiz and we kind of care about celebrities and shit. TV, still watching The Sopranos, still into that, man. so many ways, so many more racist ways to hate black people on that fucking show. The terms that they use. Ditsoon. That's one. It's like, God damn. What is this shit? And it's really like, it's, yeah. I think like, if on the black guy who tips and guess the race, I wonder, it's like the black, because it's mainly black people that, you know, they say the most racist shit. Like, I've been on that show where it's been like, whoa, I haven't heard that term in years. I wonder, could they take it? I wonder, I have to ask Rod about that. It's the creative shit that these white people, that these Italians on this show, it's crazy to me. I was like, I was like, like, I think James Gandolfini is one of the greatest actors of his generation. And then he's like, this fucking did soon. I was like, what the fuck, man? And be like, man, okay. It's good. So good. I love that show. I don't know, other TV stuff. I don't know whether what you consider small acts to be, but what I think I'm going to do a special Patreon on that show. None of my friends have really watched it. Shout out to the homie Damian Lemon. He's only seen a couple, but nobody's hardly talking about this show. And it's like a, I would want to say that they're films, and I don't know what they're classifying this thing as. It's like this hybrid thing. Cause you know, it's like I was telling somebody yesterday, like Steve McQueen does not give a fuck about your feelings, whether you're black or white. And it's an anthology about the Afro-Caribbean experience from like, I think maybe like the late '60s to the '80s. And I think I'm going to do a special episode on that. And I don't know if I can get someone on who's seen them all, but nobody's seen them. I'm going to do something where I rank them and have that for you soon. But subscribe to the Patreon. I think that if I haven't said that already, there's, by the time you get this, there's going to be a special conversation that I had with comedian and podcaster Pete Dominic, who's been on the show before, but we had a chat recently, and I'm going to share that exclusively with the Patreon folks for now. May release it, but it's Patreon now. Sign up for that shit. Get 2 bonus episodes every month. You might get more, but you're at least getting 2 a month. And they're quality. It's quality shit. Yeah, but that show makes me so angry. I don't think I've ever been angrier by a piece of media. It's like anger that like this shit just happens, and it happened. It's not that long ago. And it's just, you know, like you watch these civil rights movies, you know, the you know, all that shit, you know, like you watch those and it's like, yeah, obviously you're going to be pissed. But this is like, I don't know. It's just, it's something about Steve McQueen's style that's just so unflinching and just so tapped into realism, that's just like, it's so good. But it's just like my blood pressure boils, and you know, shout out to Randolph Terrence. We were talking about it. Yes, like, you know, why? He's like, yeah, I was like, you know what, man, maybe you shouldn't, because knowing you, the way your disposition is, if it makes me angry, I was like, dude, I think your head's gonna fucking explode. Like, there's no way you're gonna get through this. I think maybe if you had a drink, maybe if something mellowed you out while you were watching them. But it's fantastic. It just makes me, it really makes me mad. It really makes me fucking angry. That's kind of what art's supposed to do. You know, art's supposed, it's good when you can feel something, but I'm glad it's over. I'm just glad it's fucking over. But just fantastic work. The most accessible one is Lover's Rock, and that's the one that everybody kind of leans on. You know, me and Damien talked about it, and it's really great. But I think that's the most accessible one that's not going to make you angry. And the way that he did it, I mean, he put that. You could watch them in any order, but like, I mean, that's the second one in the anthology. That was the second one that was released. So I think I'm going to try to go a little more in depth on the Patreon. So let's talk about some Muzak. Got some music recommendations. Jack Harlow. That's what they all say. I believe that this is his proper studio album. Like, I guess this would be his first. This is the first thing that I've heard from him, the first complete project that I've heard. He's got some mixtapes and stuff that I'm actually interested in checking out after listening to this album. I think it's good. It's like, it's of the time. I think, you know, when I was listening to him, I was like, oh, is this guy like American Drake? Like, is this because he's very like he can rap and he's like, you know, all these kids now like kind of sing a little bit with in their shit, you know, because Drake is Canadian. It's just like he's not just trying to be reductive by saying it's just American Drake, it's a white guy doing Drake. It's just like, oh no, that's kind of in that lane of being like, oh, I got money, I'm young, I get girls, I'm cool, I'm hip, but I'm also gonna be contemplative about, is that a word, people, like I'm gonna be thinking about like what's going on around me as my life changes, who are the people that are around me and can I trust them, and I'm being vulnerable about stuff, and you know, it's good. You know, I like it. I dug it. I was listening to it at the home stretch of me finishing up some TPS reports on Friday. I was like, okay, this kid's good. I like him. I like him. He's good. Cause I know, Shalewa Sharp recommended him, when she was on, and I was just like, okay, this guy dropped an album. I got to check him out. And, you know, he had a song on the Static Selector project. You know, I think, yeah, he's good. I think he's going to be around. He's going to be around for a while. And actually, they played one of his songs on Power this week. I think it was the Tyler Hero song, I reckon. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, so that is good. Like, that, I'm trying to not be that old dude that's like, oh, these kids. No, this dude can rap. He's good. He's legit. And I was talking about it with a friend, like how I was like, okay, is this guy, you know, I think he's just in that lane. It's not necessarily he's trying to be. It's like you can be a little more vulnerable now because of people like, you know, the way Joe Budden was as an MC, the way like you had Wale and Kid Cudi and these guys like just really be super vulnerable that had all this talent, but that can make you really think about shit and like the stuff that hurt them, and they rap about that shit. So, you know, like it's an interesting lane to be in, and I dig it. I really like this kid. So he's for real. The second thing, what's the second album that I have for you? The second project that I'd like to talk about. Leanne LeHavis, Live at the Roundabout. This is an EP that came out this past Friday, last week. You know, I love her. I think, I don't know. I've seen people talk about their favorite album of the year. And I think Leanne LeHavis's this self-titled project that she put out this year is probably my favorite. It's one that I go back to more than most. And recently we had Elzai that I really liked, this in the hip hop category, but like, I have to really sit down and think about this stuff because, you know, normally throughout the year, I'm just kind of like, always listening to podcasts, and you know, some of the bigger projects though I will you know, check out and stuff, but it's like, and then and I didn't do any stand up this year, so I'm not really riding out and just really blasting this music. But you know, Quick and Dirty, it would definitely be Alzai's new album, Seven Times Down, Eight Times Up. Alfredo, Freddie Gibbs, Leanne LaHavis. I like that. Obviously love the Selena Gomez. I would like to get Selena Gomez. Heyo, she's awesome. Yeah, it's a couple more. I'll try to put something together for you guys, like music wise. But yeah, this Leanne LaHavis did this project. She did a live stream concert earlier this year, in July, and she only put four songs on here because I actually bought a ticket for that, and she did at least an hour, and I wish that she would have put. I think my favorite record is oh my God. That's bad that I don't know the. It's not. I know the. I'm gonna pull it up on Tidal. I would have thought, you know, now that I want to look for it, and it's actually. I thought there was like a best of 2020. Okay, so it is on the best albums of 2020. Read My Mind is my favorite record on the Leanne LaHavis album. I think she's fantastic, but it would have been dope if she did the whole thing, but maybe, but I mean, get all the money you can from this, that live performance that she did. It's really dope. But she's got five songs, Seven Times. And Seven Times is a nice jam. Actually, Seven Times is a really great, mellow, like, it's a nice jam. Paper Thin, obviously. Paper Thin and Bittersweet are, like, the big records on this song. On this album, on the album, and obviously on the EP, but, like, Bittersweet, I think, was the first single. And I really loved the way that she, like, artistically, I was listening to her in an interview. I don't know if I've said this on the show before, but it's like, I know Bill Burr has mentioned this, but like, you can learn so much from musicians, and I'll tie it into I'll tie that Bill Burr into, you know, something that I learned from him. Like, you learn a lot from musicians, like as a stand-up. And like, there's part of it showmanship and other like technical things. But I was listening to her. She did this interview on the with the needle drop guy, Anthony Fantano. I kind of lost touch of what he was doing, but I was like, yo, he got Leanne LaHavis on his show. And he interviewed her for like, I think like almost an hour. And they were talking about Bittersweet. And it's obviously a song about like breaking up with somebody, and it's like a gut wrenching performance. It's fucking great. Like it's a big song. And then they were talking about like the inspiration behind it, and I'm paraphrasing what she said, but she said, you know, let me even just look. You know what, guys? Because it's Christmas, I don't care how much time I'm doing. I'm just gonna go. We might just go overtime, guys. This maybe we'll just call this a robust episode. Bear with me. I'm gonna go to Genius. I'm gonna look up Leanne LaHavis, I just want to be as accurate as I can be on this. Because I want to get, sometimes they talk a little bit about what the song is about. Okay. I want to see if I can find this. What have the artists said about the song? Okay, here we go. Actually, all right. This is a quote from Leanne LaHavis. I started this song a long time ago, and it was actually one of the contenders for my second album. This album is plotting a timeline, and lyrically, this song is an overview of what's to come. And the entire album is bittersweet. If it wasn't self-titled, it would be called Bittersweet. Sonically, it's also quite a statement. There's nothing else really like it on the album, and it felt appropriate to start with this. As for the repetition of lyrics in this song, I really like poetry, and I was influenced by some of the poetry I was reading at the time, and the idea of repeating a word to give it this whole different meaning. Basically, okay, so I'm gonna have to watch. So she did a verified with interview with the, okay, basically this song is kind of like about a breakup. Yeah, she's breaking up with some dude that treated her wrong. It's not a fun song. But she goes into depth about it in the interview, and she said, you know, like, I really like, she basically said, I like Jill Scott's song, A Long Walk. You know, Jill Scott, let's take a long walk around the park, relaxation, or maybe we can make a booty, you know what I'm talking about. That's a song about a relationship that's kind of like just starting, you're really digging this person. And she said, you know, like, I liked how Jill Scott at the end, like towards the end of there's repetition. And by the end of the song, she goes higher and higher with the chorus or whatever. And it like builds to this big thing. And she was like, yeah, I wanted to do that with Bittersweet. Now, both those songs, one song is about the beginning of a relationship or really being in that euphoric stage of the relationship, just starting out, being all this fun and great. And then this one's like more contemplative and like, I don't know if I want to be with your ass, and maybe you need to not be around so I can be reborn again. But she had those same elements of like building and building, getting higher and higher, belting out the lyrics and giving the song the different meaning the higher you go with the performance of those lyrics. And I was like, oh shit, you know, that's fucking awesome. Where it's just like, this one thing is totally different from the other, but then at the same time, it's not that different because the skeleton, the idea behind all that is just her own interpretation of what she wanted to accomplish with that song. And I was just like, fuck yeah, that's so true. And it made me think, like, when Bill Burr was talking about, like, just how he loves going to concerts just like I do, and like seeing certain people do certain things. And I remember like seeing him do, like, I think it might have been You People Are All the Same. He's not being racist there, but I think it was 1 hour where he had the one-way conversation where, like, he's talking about his dad arguing with his mother and then going out and then like talking to a young Bill, and like you have that one-way conversation, like learning, trying to incorporate that and trying to make something funny. And it's like, oh, and I remember seeing that, and I was like, oh, you can do that, you can have I think you call it a one-way conversation. And I incorporated that into my act, like, but it wasn't like Bill Burr's joke. It was just like the technique of having an argument with somebody that you couldn't hear them, but you can only hear the one person having the argument. And I was like, oh, well, maybe I can do that in another way of like him. Like he was playing his dad arguing with his mother. I have one where like I'm my mom. I'm back home. I have a bit that's eventually going to be that if you've seen me do stand up, you've probably seen me do that bit, and it'll probably be on the next album in 2028. So it's just like that's one of those things where it's like you can incorporate stuff that you see and add it. Like, you know, if somebody has like the Sham God dribble, everybody has it. You can add that into your arsenal, but it's still going to be the way you do it. But it's still a Sham God. It's still that. It's still a crossover, but you add your flavor to it. You know, it's just a technique. It's not like you're not stealing from them. You're not stealing the bit. You're just using that idea and making it your own and incorporating it into your own act. So basically, long story short, check out this Leanne LeHavis album. It's this EP. It's great. Check out the album if you haven't. I'd say that's up there. It's at least in my top five, and I don't listen to music as much as I would like to, because sometimes when I really listen to it, I go back to stuff that I know and really just records that I was cooking yesterday, and I had that I was thinking about, I don't know why, but for the last few weeks I've been thinking about that Toro y Moi record, So Many Details. That's what I was singing earlier, 20 points if you got that. That's just been a jam that was in my head for the past 3 weeks. And you kind of go back to those songs, or you go to a playlist that you made, and not all that stuff is new. Some of it's actually, I did make a playlist for stuff that's relatively new, but you kind of go back to those old faithfuls. So yeah, so that was good. Definitely check that live EP from Leanne LeHavis live at the Roundabout live at the Roundabout. I want to make sure that I No, it's not the Roundabout. It's the Roundhouse, live at the Roundhouse. I always do that. Roundabout is something. It's a theater company in New York. Excuse me. My apologies for that. Okay, then third album. God, this is going to be long as shit. Because I haven't even got to movies yet. The Robust episode, like I said. Next album, Mayor Hawthorne, Rare Changes. Mayor Hawthorne is a singer, songwriter, producer from Michigan. And most recently, he's teamed up with this guy, Jake One, from Seattle. And they have a side project called Tuxedo. And one of my favorite records, actually one of my favorite Tiny Desk performances, along with Leanne LeHavis's. Leanne LeHavis has two. The one that she did, I think, in 2016 or 2017. Was fantastic. She does this version of her record Unstoppable that like could fucking make you cry, and it's so good. But Tuxedo has a Tiny Desk from a couple years ago that's fucking fantastic, and they got this one of my favorite records of recent memory is one called July, which is the last record off Tuxedo 2. And that's fantastic. So this is just Mayor Hawthorne just singing, you know. He's got this album. It's called Rare Changes, and it's an LP. It's just, he's just like kind of like got an old school vibe. I dig this dude. You know, it's just a cool dude. Got some good records. It just made me want to go back into his catalog, where it's just like there's so much shit that I've like missed for whatever reason, you know. So this definitely makes me want to, you know, get into his other stuff. So that's it for music. So just check out Mayor Hawthorne, check out Tuxedo, check out Jack Harlow. There's some good stuff in there. Let's see. Let's get into some movies. Okay. First movie I want to talk about that I don't think I thought that I talked about this, but I'm not 100% sure. Sound of Metal, which stars Riz Ahmed and Olivia Cooke. Let me read you the Google blurb. A heavy metal drummer's life is thrown into free fall when he begins to lose his hearing. That's all you need to know, man. Like, Riz Ahmed plays this dude who's a drummer, and he loses his fucking hearing. His life is turned upside down, and the movie is basically him coming to terms with that. And I think this is one of the best performances I've seen this year so far. It's up there. He's definitely, if he doesn't win any hardware, he's got to be considered for some hardware. This is a terrific performance. It was written by Darius Marder, who also directed Abraham Marder. And the story was by, I think, let's see, I think C in France, Derek C in France, who did one of my favorite movies that, you know, kind of it's he more recently did oh my God, Chris, come on, bro. Where is this show? Oh my God. I know this much is true. The miniseries on HBO. C in France did that. And he also did The Place Beyond the Pines in 2012, which was fucking incredible. Like, that's one that kind of, that's in the, what is this, the 2010s? Probably one of my favorite movies. Also, there's definitely Last of Us Part 2 vibes in that. I want to go back and watch that. I need to go back and watch that really soon. But that movie's like kind of, I don't know if it's, is it underrated? It is, I would say. Fucking great movie. But this one, Sound of Metal, you know, so because that's the pedigree attached to this with the story, because it originally was supposed to be another story that they call Metalhead that became, I think it was from a short film, if I'm not mistaken. They were going to do some type of project, and it just, and then Martyr ended up taking it and building Sound of Metal, which is just, it's an incredible film. It's an incredible performance. Very, like, kind of just really grounded in reality. There's a couple scenes that, like, there's one scene that's really sweet that I fucked with. I'm not going to give anything away that I liked. Yeah, that's one of the best movies of the year. One of the best performances. Riz Ahmed, Olivia Cooke is great. I mean, she's always really good, you know, but that's not a surprise. Riz Ahmed's just like a really fucking good actor. But this shit is just, man, really good, really good. I highly recommend Sound of Metal. It's on Amazon Prime. You can find it there. Next movie, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I mean, come on. Now, I'm going to be a little biased with this because I'll preface this by saying August Wilson was a playwright. He's America's Shakespeare. He's on that same level. Very personal to me because that's how I found myself as an actor with him. I think I was about 19. I want to say I was about 19 years old, like maybe my sophomore year of college, where I think I had heard about Fences. I heard about James Earl Jones. But when you start to really dig into the path that you want to take in your life, I think I was about 19 years old, and I remember reading his plays from the college library, just started reading all of his shit, everything that they had at the time. And it changed my life, because before then it was Max, you playing white characters that are not people of color. Sound of Music, Bye Bye Birdie, the Dick Van Dyke part, the King Charlemagne and Pippin before, in high school productions and all that stuff, that's what you do, but then I was like, no, okay, here we go. Like this character is black. There's no getting around it. This guy sounds like my uncle. This guy sounds like the dude at the barbershop. This guy sounds like my dad. This woman is like my mom, my aunt. Like, it's just like, not the one I talked about on Patreon, but it's like, this is a real fleshed out character. This is real. You know what I mean? Had some gravitas to it. So I'll read you the blurb on here, the Google blurb. Tensions rise when trailblazing blues singer Ma Rainey and her band gather at a recording studio in Chicago in 1927. I mean, long story short, everybody hit the right notes. This was fantastic. They managed to make a play that normally ran at 2.5 hours into a 90-minute film. And it was adapted by Ruben Santiago Hudson, directed by George C. Wolfe, who was a famous director and a famous theater director. Produced by Denzel Washington. It's terrific. I mean, Viola Davis, Ma Rainey was a real life, blues singer, and probably didn't get a lot of the credit that she deserved. Viola Davis did her thing. I mean, Viola Davis to me is gonna get busy, whenever you hand her a script and whenever she agrees to do something. Shout out to Firestar. I think it might have been Ba that posted a clip from Doubt, when she's like her and Meryl Streep going at it, and I rewatched it. It was like 7 minutes. It was just like, that's all it took. It's all it took is 7 minutes from that movie for her to eat and for her to get busy, and she rocked it. And Meryl Streep, her and one of the goats. Yeah, she was great, but I think this film belongs to the Chadwick Boseman's character of Levy, who is the I would say the antagonist in the play. And this is the first time that you see, I think this is one of the first times that we've seen Chadwick Boseman on film play a person that was not the best dude in the world, kind of playing an asshole, not that much of a bad guy, not that much of a good guy, because most of his other roles, with the exception of James Brown beat his wife and all that shit, but that was a real guy. That was a biopic, and it, not to discredit that performance in that film, because I thought he was really good in it. The movie was okay. But Chadwick Boseman kind of had that regal quality to him in almost everything that he did. And, he was somebody who was a good actor. And like, you think about Black Panther, it's an iconic role. But on the surface, that's kind of a boring character. Like most superheroes are. Most of the good guys are kind of fucking boring when you look at it. Like, you think about, when you think about The Dark Knight, you think about the Nolan's Batman, you're thinking about Heath Ledger, you're thinking about these great films. I thought they were, people say what they would, I thought they were very good, to say the least. But when you think Dark Knight to be that one of his great movies, you think about Heath Ledger, you're not really thinking about Christian Bale, who was very good as Batman and Bruce Wayne. But it's like, you're thinking about the Joker. So when Chadwick does this role, it's like, yeah, okay. Levy's got some issues. And he sort of just lays that bare in this fantastic monologue. And I remember doing that. I remember doing that monologue. That's one of the first monologues that I had like really worked on and all that shit. And so I knew what I was in store for and what everybody else was when they were going to see this movie. So I knew already. And you could kind of tell that, you know, nobody else knew about him. Only his very close family and friends knew that he was sick. But you take that monologue, you watch that monologue and a couple other scenes where it's like, I think he knew he was not long for this world and he made peace with it. And I ain't never seen him do anything like that before. And it's a beautiful thing. Like, it's like if you have to go out, and I say this every time somebody, an artist who passes away, who was great, it was like, well, you know, if you got to go out and that's what you left us with, well, gosh darn it, you did your job, man. You know, it's like you did what you were put on earth to do. And God bless him. God rest his soul. And I know people will put it, you know, it'll get sized a little bit because he's not here. But, you know, you had Aisha on last week and we were talking about it. And I was like, you know, I hadn't seen it at the time, but I was like, yeah, I kind of know, because that role is made for that, you know. And you can have people talk, and people in their critiques will say, oh, you know, it's a little theatrical at time. Well, it was adapted from a fucking play, and you create a world with people fucking talking when you're doing theater. And by gum, so the fuck what that nothing blew up in this movie. Well, stuff blew up. There's tensions that explode in this movie. There's tension in all this. You know what I'm talking about. But like, I think it's just, how many times can I say reductive in this podcast? But I think you're being it's just nitpicking because you don't really have anything bad to say about it. Now, I know I saw one of my theater friends on Facebook say some stuff that this person, she overall liked the play, but it's like, oh, I've had problems with it. And I was like, yeah, but you're kind of fucking nitpicking a little bit. And it's about, you know, basically black art not being appreciated, black art being used and abused and just fucking just for profit. There's a scene in the movie, I'm not really spoiling anything, but there's a scene in the movie where, you know, Ma Rainey is late to the recording session, and before she sings, she wants her Coke. And the Coke, she kind of has a monologue about the Coke, and I was like, you know, you're taking my voice, they just want my voice, and you can't even, you're using me, but you don't want to spend 5 cents or however much it costs to get a couple of Cokes so I can fucking sing, but you're going to exploit me. You know what I mean? So it's like, you could see it all. You could just see that bullshit all over the fucking movie. And it's kind of I wouldn't say it's a miracle, but it's like, you know, for a film, they did what they needed it to do. I was listening to a Ruben Santiago Hudson talk about like this thing being 90 minutes. And I was like, oh shit, like 90. Okay. Cause you know, damn, you know, like when you're doing like August Wilson, like these characters will fucking monologue till they're blue in the face. The last play that I saw before everything shut down was his last one called Radio Golf. And these characters like would talk their ass off. But you rock with it because it's interesting stuff that they're saying, and it's compelling. Like if you get even the worst actor, the worst actor on that show that had the lead, He was good because of the words. Like, you could just, I could tell for a certain reason that he wasn't that as good as everybody else, but let me not be a dick. But this play, this film was really good. I really thought that they got the essence of what August Wilson was trying to say in this piece. But I think what it's going to do, I think there's like a Netflix that I'm kind of apprehensive to see. Like, there's like this August Wilson competition. There's like a that these young kids do monologues from it. And I think it's on Netflix. I'm typing August Wilson monologue. Monologue competition. I think it's either on Netflix or it might be. I don't know. It's called something. Giving Voice. Yeah. Let's see. Giving Voice. Six ambitious student actors audition for the prestigious August Wilson monologue competition, culminating in a riveting final round on Broadway. I'm going to have to watch this, but I just think I'm just going to, it, like, these competition shows make me feel weird a little bit, because it's like people like actively following their dreams, and you have people that try to like fucking shut these kids. I don't like it. But I think I'm going to, and it's a lot of like, it's a lot of pretentiousness attached to that shit too. And then these kids are like mad young doing these auditions, but like, that's what you do when you're a kid. You do this stuff. You'd play beyond your age and all this stuff, but it's interesting. I'm gonna check it out. I just feel that's how I feel about that American Idol shit, Dancing with the Stars and all that. Not necessarily because they're all fucking famous and shit, but like American Idol and people that really have dreams and people like kind of want to shit on them a little bit. The people in those positions, because I think that's all I'll say about that right now. I'll give you another couple ones and we'll end this shit. Wow, it's almost 2 hours. The next movie, Always Shine. Let me read you this blurb. Two women, both actresses with differing degrees of success. Hey, let's try that again. Take two. Two women, both actresses with differing degrees of success, travel north from Los Angeles to Big Sur for a weekend vacation. Both see the trip as an opportunity to reconnect after years of competition and jealousy have driven a wedge between them. What the fuck? I'm not reading that right. These are never written that well. Some of them aren't written that well. Upon arrival at their isolated forest retreat, the pair discover that their once intimate friendship has deteriorated into forced conversations, betrayals, petty jealousy, and deep-seated resentment. This film was directed by Sophia Takal and written by Lawrence Michael Levine. You may know Lawrence Michael Levine recently wrote and directed Black Bear, which I recommended a couple months ago, that I saw at the Montclair Film Festival virtual film screening. And I just bought Black Bear on digitally. This movie was good. This is on Amazon Prime. I kind of like this genre of white people movies where when white people go off to a weekend retreat to a cabin in the woods, shit is going to go down and you don't know if everybody's going to make it out alive. And those movies are ones that I really enjoy. It's really good. It's really just a movie. For the most part, Mackenzie Davis, who I like, I'm starting to really enjoy her, especially after recently seeing Halt and Catch Fire. which I think is just a good, solid series. And, you know, she's most recently in Happiest Season. And I would also say, if you're into her, watch the San Junipero episode of Black Mirror with my girl Gugu and Botha Raw. Caitlin Fitzgerald, who was most recently in Sweet Bitter on Stars, which unfortunately got canceled. They're both really good actresses, and they just kind of shit just happens. Hey, let's say that it's worth seeing. I watched it last Sunday night. And I was like, oh, this is really good. Like, this was, you know, and it forced me. I wanted to see it because Lawrence Michael Levine was involved. This movie came out in 2016, and his wife, Sophia Tikal, directed this one. And it's really good. It's on Amazon Prime. It's definitely worth watching. I'll give you the last movie. The last movie is Tenet. Finally got to see this movie. I got the Steelbook edition from Best Buy. Let's read you. We'll see what the Google blurb has to say about this. A secret agent embarks on a dangerous time-bending mission to prevent the start of World War III. That's a really good description in one sentence. Yeah. That's what it is on paper. There's a lot of the shit, like, you know, that's one of the best Google blurbs ever. This movie's all over the place. It's a clusterfuck of action, time bending, like it said. And it's a beautiful shit show. I really dug it. I watched so many YouTube videos trying to explain this shit to me. And I did come to a realization of how things worked out. I really liked it off the first look. My only thing was I'm going to admit to you, I did have a sleep or two, as the homies from the Firestarter podcast say. But I'm going to watch it again. Obviously, I bought it on Blu-ray. And I'm going to be watching it again and trying to pick certain things out. I want to do I'm going to try to put together another one of these roundtables, because you guys seem to like that. I'm going to try to figure one out with a couple other people and just kind of talk about it. We'll see what happens. But none of my friends have seen it yet. I was the only one so pressed to see this after it was released in the theaters, you know, 3 months ago, and nobody gives a shit. I thought, it seems like I'm the only one that cares in my friend group. But I thought John David Washington was good. I thought there were some funny parts in it that I wasn't expecting from a Christopher Nolan action movie. And the more that I discovered, you know, picking this thing apart with the theories and everything, the more I just kind of appreciated what, you know, Christopher Nolan, that, you know, put together. And yeah, I'm a big fan of his, but you have to be. I think I was just so excited to see this that I couldn't wait until I didn't want to, because I got it on Tuesday and I didn't want to wait until Friday to see it. So I was just like, okay, I'm going to watch this on a Tuesday night when I have to work the next day, and I've probably will get tired because it's 2.5 hours. So you really have to be fucking paying attention. Some of this shit is like suspension of disbelief, but otherwise it's just kind of like you really have to pay attention. And I've, you know what, to be honest with you, this is bad, but I'm going to admit it anyway. I think every time that I've seen the most recent Christopher Nolan movies, I've always been so excited that I've neglected taking care of myself just to see it. So I don't know if it was because I didn't want it to be spoiled. So when I saw Inception like 10 years ago, I remember I was like, fuck it, I'm going to go see it tonight. Like, I think I had worked all day And you know my schedule. I wake up really early. I was like, fuck it, I'm going to go see it. It was like after work. I didn't take a nap or anything. And I fell asleep in the theater on Inception. I did buy it on Blu-ray and I saw it and I liked it and all that shit. But I remember like fucking falling asleep. Interstellar. When that came out, I fucked up and had a steak dinner. I had a steak dinner at Outback. And then I went to go see it in IMAX and I dozed off a couple times. But I got Interstellar. Interstellar is a little more accessible than Tenet and Inception. Then Dunkirk, I was so excited. Like there was like some window where you would get like bonus points or something at AMC if you saw it. And I think it was my favorite. Like I'm losing my memory because I haven't been to the theater in 10 months, 9 months or whatever. Dolby, I think it was like in Dolby, like see this movie and get like 10 bonus points. And I was like, I gotta fucking see it now. And it's another one of those things where it's right after and all this shit is blowing up in this movie. It's a war movie, for Christ's sakes. If I find a way to fucking knock out in that one, just be like, and then it's, you know, so it's not like I'll never work with Christopher Nolan. he'll hear it. Somebody will play this audio, but it's not like I don't buy the movies and watch them and be like, oh, that was good. it just wasn't meant to be. So I didn't. So there were a couple moments where I just like dozed off because it's just because I was happened to be tired. But I'm obviously going to rewatch it, but I watched like a bunch of these like YouTube videos to just kind of just trying to make sure I was aware of certain things. And then I'll go back and watch it. But yeah, I was excited to see it. And I actually, because everybody kind of tipped me off on they just like tipped me off on, hey, this is really loud. This is, you know, the audio is crazy. The dialogue is this and that. Sometimes the dialogue gets washed out because of what's going on in the scene. So I actually watched this with my PlayStation headphones, and I just hooked it up. I have the wireless, but for some reason I just hooked it up through my joystick or whatever, and just like it was dope, man. It was still a cool experience. Obviously you want to see something like this in the theater, but I like my TV. I like the sound system. It's still one of those movies that you will go back and watch to pick up certain things. And yeah, I dug it. I really liked the action. I thought John David Washington was really good. And some of the criticism they're trying to say, well, this is just like X and this is, I kind of disagree. I just like, it was all this crazy shit. But at the same time, I feel like Dwayne Wade where I'm like, I love it. I love it. It's like even the super critics, like the nerds, like David Chin, who I like, you know, I really like his analysis on things, even if I disagree. But he said something similar where like it was this was wrong. This was, he had a tweet about how he just loved every minute of it, basically, despite everything that was like this crazy ass shit show. And I would just agree. Like anytime a film makes you want to go back, part of it's like your ego is like, I'm not stupid. I can understand this. I can understand what entropy is, you know, and why characters were doing certain things. Yeah, I did really enjoy that experience. So you kind of can find things in like the small movies where, you know, nothing's happening. And then, you know, like nothing explodes. Like they blew up a fucking 747 in this one. I mean, it's amazing, like, these set pieces that they had and the science behind it and what he's trying to accomplish. It's very ambitious, and I think Christopher Nolan really takes these big swings, and I appreciate his ambition, you know, more than anything, you know. It's almost like this fearlessness where it's like, no, this is what this movie's going to be about. It's going to be cerebral. It's going to be, you know, I'm going to take some swings, and you may not get it, but I like when you kind of have to dig a little bit and find the meaning and understanding and see things from a different perspective. So I'm kind of excited to watch this again and then hopefully have some folks on to talk about it with. And also just, you know, like Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. It's fantastic. It's like one of those, what it's going to do, you know, it's going to inspire some kids to do this thing. It's going to inspire stuff like that August Wilson monologue competition that I'm kind of afraid to watch. It's going to inspire kids to want to do this and to really have their shit together, just like they do with musical theater. This has been enough. I've talked to you for enough. I've talked to you for a little over 2 hours, and I hope you fucking appreciate that from this free podcast. I hope you appreciate that. Thank you so much for listening. Check out the Patreon. Subscribe. I want to thank Amaze. I don't want to say your last name, but I think this might be I'm not sure if this is a handle, but I want to appreciate you for subscribing. New subscriber. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I will talk. Oh, have a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, a Happy Kwanzaa, and whatever. If you don't celebrate any of those holidays, fuck you. No, if you don't celebrate any of those holidays, I hope that you are safe and you have a great one. And all that good stuff. So I will talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.